Is there something really absurd that skeeves you out?
Getting a paper cut on my eyeball?
A fear you can't shake?
I'm gonna leak ocular fluid down my cheeks. It's gonna go into my mouth and I will perish.
Whatever scares you, I want to talk about it. Join me, Larry Mullins, on my new podcast, Your Weirdest Fears. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from. Is there something really absurd that skeeves you out?
Getting a paper cut on my eyeball?
A fear you can't shake?
I'm going to leak ocular fluid down my cheeks. It's going to go into my mouth and I will perish.
Whatever scares you, I want to talk about it. Join me, Larry Mullins, on my new podcast, Your Weirdest Fears. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. It's a football Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in with us. 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Well, Rocket can. Coming up at the top of the hour, joining us in studio, friend of the show, Josh Booty. And then at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific, we will do NFL picks with Jersey Jerry from Barstool Sports. And producing this extravaganza, he's an enemy of mine today, and I'll explain why later. It is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey as well. I may be looking for a new producer on Monday. I'll explain coming up in a bit. But Hickey, you know what my biggest fear is on a football Friday? And I never thought this was going to be the first words that I say into a microphone on a football Friday. When I do the scream of "It's a Football Friday" edition of the Zach Gelb Show, I always fear that it's not actually Friday, because I don't know about you, I am terrible, absolutely terrible with remembering the days of the week. Like, there's some days I walk in here and it's a Thursday and I think that it's a Wednesday. So whenever I do the football Friday and the long version of it, I always fear that maybe it's not actually a football Friday.
You don't get the feel of Friday? Friday's a feel. So I guess a Seinfeld bit we're doing here.
Most weeks I do, but for whatever reason, and we are on the cusp of a major, major, major weekend in college football, and then to some extent pro football as well, because you do have some teams on life support that need a win in the worst way. I don't know what it is. Out of all the football Fridays that we've had this year, with how much buzz there should be for Georgia and Tennessee and Alabama LSU, it doesn't feel like a normal football Friday. It doesn't feel as if this is a football Friday today. So not that you're a very good speech guy. I can't envision you being one of those locker room leaders, rah, rah, let's get everyone going. But are there any words of wisdom that you could bestow upon us to get me into the mode of actually realizing that today is a football Friday? Because when I was screaming football Friday, I'm like, oh, is today actually a Thursday? I didn't see any juice from you. No juice in the newsroom. No exuberance in the newsroom. I'm not really feeling the football Friday right now.
Come on. We are 24 hours away from what is about to be one of the games of the century in Tennessee, Georgia.
The century!
About 25 and a half hours away from another top 10 matchup with Alabama LSU in Death Valley. The place is going to be rocking. We have elimination day possibly on Sunday. Rams, Buccaneers. You know, that could be a game where the loser is out of the playoff picture.
Oh, okay.
Come on. Let's go. Let's go. There's some storylines here. Let's get fired up.
You had me until
wake
you,
up.
You had me until you started screaming, let's go. Let's go.
I'm not a yeller. I'll leave the yelling for you. I'll just do it, you know, in a lower pitched, or I guess higher pitched way.
All righty. Let's get to it. Clearly, the biggest story for me entering this weekend It is not the World Series, and the Phillies may get eliminated tomorrow night. I'm hoping that there's going to be a Game 7 because I want to see a Game 7. It is not the NFL this weekend. We are going to start to get a better understanding of where these teams are at in college football. Because I really do believe that at the end of the year, the guidelines, the basic guidelines for the college football playoff are going to be two SEC teams that are going to get in. You are then going to have the winner of Michigan, Ohio State get in. And then if Clemson is undefeated, I do believe Clemson will be that final team. I would love to see TCU run the table. I just don't think they're going to do so. And the Pac-12 champion is most likely going to have a loss or two on that resume. So when we get to this weekend, it's a major, major, major weekend of SEC football. And for Alabama, that's what actually, in a weird way, stands out to me the most. Because Georgia and Tennessee, for the majority of the year, have been the two best teams in the country. And for Tennessee, the question was, well, how good are they going into that Alabama game? And then they beat Alabama. As long as you get a close game here between Georgia and Tennessee, both teams, regardless of the outcome, are going to have a good chance at making the college football playoff based off one condition. That Alabama loses in the SEC title game, assuming Alabama's in the SEC title game. Because if Georgia gets to the SEC title game undefeated and they beat Alabama, we know they're definitely in. And if Georgia loses this weekend and they have to wait and Tennessee gets to the SEC championship game, as long as Tennessee gets in, that then opens up, regardless of this outcome this weekend, a spot for both Georgia and Tennessee in the college football playoff. The worst thing that could happen for Georgia or Tennessee is that, like, let's say if you want to get both of them in the college football playoff, let's just say Georgia wins this weekend, but then they lose in the SEC title game to Alabama. Well, that means Alabama's getting the college football playoff, and then Georgia's probably going to get in as well. And then even though Tennessee beat Alabama, they'll be out of luck. So as long as this is a close game, I still think those two teams have everything in front of them because we still don't know how good this Alabama team is going to be this year. And even though everyone in America is going to tell you this weekend, the biggest game is Georgia and Tennessee, I'm not arguing that. It is the biggest game. But I think the game that will be most telling is Alabama-LSU. Because LSU has done a 180. Brian Kelly comes in, gets clowned because he tried to pretend that he was a Southerner with the family stuff, then does all the dancing with recruits. That was a lot of cringeworthy videos. And they lose that first game of the season in the Superdome to Florida State in embarrassing fashion. When that happened, I did not think, even with all the talent that LSU has, I did not think that we'd be talking in November about LSU and a big game against Alabama. But for LSU, this is a statement game that the Brian Kelly era, which has been working at 6-2, is really working. Now, I think this is going to be a close game. I don't think LSU is going to win the game. I'm going to lean Alabama. But for Alabama, this is really a statement game. Because you look at that Alabama schedule, and maybe it's just a product of everyone trying to root for the demise of Alabama, root for Alabama to fall off their perch and not get into the college football playoff. Because there's been years where Alabama has got into the college football playoff and has not won the national championship. Just look at last year. And we saw when Tua got hurt, they didn't make the college football playoff. But for the most part, it's death, taxes, and Alabama in the college football playoff. If Alabama loses one more game the rest of the season, or dare I say it, lose this weekend in Death Valley, their season's over for the Alabama standard of always being in the college football playoff and having a shot to take home the national championship trophy. And for Alabama this year, they've never looked like the Alabama that we know. Against Texas, Quinn Ewers got knocked out of that game. He didn't play for three quarters. They could have lost and probably should have lost to Texas. Against A&M, I know Haynes King was playing. and you had a whole quarterback injury with Alabama with Bryce Young not playing, but that spread was still a 20-something point spread. And if Jimbo Fisher actually knew what he was doing down at the goal line when it came to the play calling, Alabama probably should have lost that game too, losing that game by 4 points. And then their biggest game of the year up until this point was Tennessee. They were not ready. They were sloppy from the start. They ended up getting back in the game, thinking maybe they're going to win the game. They missed the field goal. Then their defense crumbles, marches right down the field, Hendon Hooker and company, and then they kick their game-winning field goal. So this Alabama team, they still control their own destiny. But there's no more wiggle room. There's no more margin of error because they already lost that margin of error when they lost to Tennessee. So this is a weekend for anyone doubting Alabama, where not that Alabama rises from the dead because they're not dead and gives you the middle finger and says, bleep you, we're back, blah, blah, blah. But it could serve as a reminder is the best way to say it. That anyone doubting Alabama could pipe down for a few more weeks if Alabama takes care of business against LSU. And if Alabama wins a sloppy game, then those issues or those thoughts are still there where, yeah, Alabama is maybe not as great as they've been in years past. And it's so obvious why they're not as great as they've been in years past, because the Alabama passing game as of late has really taken a drastic step in the right direction. And you look at all those quarterbacks, whether it was Jalen Hurts to Tua Tagovailoa to Mac Jones, to now Bryce Young, for the most part, those wide receiving rooms were loaded. Right now on Alabama's offense, the only two players that really make you shake in your boots are Bryce Young and then the running back in Gibbs. Those are the only two players that really make you shake in your boots. You don't have the elite wide receivers right now this year with what we've seen so far at Alabama. And if they could find a way to get more out of that receiving unit, then maybe they could get back into the college football playoff. And maybe they could still find a way to win a college football playoff game. And maybe be in the national championship. With that being said, though, they are pretty much relying so heavily on Bryce Young. And in years past, that quarterback at Alabama through the last three or four that they had that really excelled had these unbelievable weapons at their disposal. Now, I'm sure there's people listening out there saying right now, Zach, pipe down, save the small violin, it's still Alabama. Totally fair. And when you usually have all that talent, how many schools have said the other thing? Oh, we just don't have the talent, we just don't have the horses to compete with those guys. Here's what I'm saying. Alabama is vulnerable this year. But even when Alabama is vulnerable, it does not mean that they're still not going to be a top four team in the college football playoff. Like if you ask me today, do I think they're a top four team in the college football playoff? I would say no. I would say Tennessee, Georgia are going to find a way to get into the college football playoff. The winner of Michigan, Ohio State. And then I would probably think that I don't think Alabama is not better than Clemson. But if you have an undefeated Clemson, they're going to find a way to get into the college football playoff. So, yes, everyone's excited. Everyone's pumped up about Georgia and Tennessee this weekend. And that's probably going to be the better game this weekend. That's probably going to be the best game this weekend. And I hope it lives up to the hype. Because if it does, that means it's coming down to a high-scoring game and probably whoever has the ball last or whoever kicks a game-winning field goal. But the game that I'm actually most intrigued by is Alabama because I already know that Georgia's great. I already know that what Tennessee has done this year, Tennessee is great. For the first time in a while, we can now actually question Alabama because they have not really showed up and dominated at the level that we usually expect from the Alabama Crimson Tide. Hickey, this weekend, right now, Georgia-Tennessee, who do you like to win the game? For most of the week, I was ready to go with good old Rocky Top. As we sit here at 6:14 p.m. Eastern on a big football Friday where the energy is here and it now feels like a football Friday. So good job out of you. I think Georgia wins the game. I do think Georgia wins the game. And I flip-flop on this ever since you had Tennessee beat Alabama. I probably lean more Tennessee than Georgia. But as I sit here right now, as much as I want to see Tennessee win, as much as I like Josh Heupel, as much as I like Hendon Hooker and hope he wins the Heisman, I think Georgia finds a way to win this game. And their defense, even with that, after losing their stud player, that defense is still really, 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 really good. And I'm curious to see if it is a shootout, how Stetson Bennett, who's always been doubted, does compete going mano-a-mano with Mr. Hendon Hooker at Tennessee.
No doubt that Georgia defense is very good. They've also never seen an offense like this in Tennessee in really 2 years.
Oh,
I think the
Rocky
Vols
top.
Win the game, go into Athens, ooh, pull off the upset, which is the Vegas upset, at least in terms of the point spread, win.
And then Georgia fans become the biggest Tennessee fans the rest of the way.
That's right. They become massive Vol fans. Went out 13-0.
Okay. Alabama LSU this weekend. How do you see that playing on out?
I think Alabama wins. I think it's going to be an ugly game where I think coming out of it, I don't think you feel good about either team. Like LSU is overranked, I think very overranked, being at number 10 in a two-loss team. So I don't think they're very good and as good as their ranking. And Alabama, I mean, you hit on it perfectly. It's just like this is not your prototypical Alabama Nick Saban coach team. Talent-wise, they're very sloppy. They have uncharacteristic discipline issues with penalties and turnovers.
Think about all the wide receivers that Alabama has produced in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Amari Cooper, Calvin Ridley. You could go to last year, Jameson Williams and John Metchie III.
Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, when he was there, Henry Ruggs.
Oh, Devontae Smith, hello, the guy won a Heisman.
It's and for the most part, it's more than one, two receiver they have at a time.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They have been wide receiver you can make the argument last like 5 years.
And there's not been a receiver this year at Alabama that has moved the needle for me and has captivated my attention. Where most of the times when I'm watching Alabama and I see the offense, my jaw is hitting the floor saying, Kobe White style, wow, wow, wow. That explosiveness and that great talent, the wide receiver position, just hasn't been there this year. And that's why I do, to make a side point here, think that Bryce Young's the best quarterback in the country. I'm not saying that he was going to win the Heisman this year. I think that should go to Hendon Hooker. But if we're looking at who's going to be the first quarterback taken in the draft, if I'm a scout, and I know he's not the tallest in the world, but if I'm a scout, which I'm not, I'm going with Bryce Young.
I would agree. He's doing more with less, and it's rare to see your receiver, running back being your best receiver. That's what Jahmyr Gibbs has been so far for Alabama this year.
And we know Ohio State has been filled with good receivers for a while now. But you look at that Ohio State receiving room, and how great that Ohio State receiving room, that's usually what the Alabama receiving room looks like. And this year, that Alabama receiving room is not there. And when you ask, and we say this all the time, this is a team sport. When you ask one player, though, to basically be a video game and have an, I don't want to say an 84, like an 88 overall team rating, beat a team that's like a 97, that's where it gets difficult. And not that LSU is a 97, Alabama's rated better than LSU, but these are one of those moments where not having all those weapons that you used to having, you'll wonder how far can Bryce Young take them this year. And I think Bryce Young is a heck of a player. I think Bryce Young is a great player. We saw that last year, and you'll see it again at times this year. But I just look at the teams like Georgia and Tennessee, they're better this year. And all Alabama has to do is lose one more game, what happens this week in the SEC title game, and then they're donezo in terms of making the college football playoff. Would you agree, and I know we got to take a break, that Georgia-Tennessee make the college football playoff, the winner of Ohio State-Michigan makes the college football playoff, and then if Clemson is undefeated, then Clemson gets in. I know that you said TCU, I think. Didn't you predict TCU is going to be undefeated?
Yes.
Let me just say TCU loses a game for this scenario. You would go if TCU loses a game, you would go then with those four teams that I just said?
If TCU is out, then yes, because you can't put in Oregon over Tennessee and or Georgia, because the loss that Oregon had is way worse than either, assuming either, you know, Tennessee or Georgia face this weekend.
The best thing I think for college football this year would be Clemson to lose. Give me a Clemson loss so then it could open up that door for the Big 12 or the Pac-12. I would love to see that. Anyway, we just threw 9,000 college football points at you, so it's time to shut up and take a break. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Josh Booty's going to join us in studio at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. That is otherwise known as the top of the hour.
What makes your skin crawl? No matter how absurd, I want to know.
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. You send me your fear.
I'm just so weirded out about the texture and how they can just move around and flop.
And then I go to the experts to learn how to overcome them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from. Is there something really absurd that skeeves you out?
Getting a paper cut on my eyeball.
A fear you can't shake.
I'm going to leak ocular fluid down my cheeks. It's going to go into my mouth and I will perish.
Whatever scares you, I want to talk about it. Join me, Larry Mullins, on my new podcast, Your Weirdest Fears. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from. Is there something really absurd that skeeves you out?
Getting a paper cut on my eyeball.
A fear you can't shake.
I'm going to leak ocular fluid down my cheeks. It's going to go into my mouth and I will perish.
Whatever scares you, I want to talk about it. Join me, Larry Mullins, on my new podcast, Your Weirdest Fears. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Celebrate together in Hannah Anderson. Holiday clothes your kids will want to wear. Choose from versatile outfits for winter play or dress up in looks special enough for the magic of the holiday. Hannah Anderson's holiday clothes are washable, durable, and are made in unbelievably soft fabrics. So whether you're getting all dressed up or spending the day playing outdoors, your kid will be happy in Hannah's. Hannah Anderson. Holiday clothes made to play, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. You can think of Rally Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Whenever you get into a championship series or you go on a long playoff run, there's always moments that you will remember forever. And if you do have the Astros go on to win the World Series, and you look back at the entirety of this run where they've only lost two games and those two games occur in the World Series. And could they lose game six with Zach Wheeler pitching on the mound tomorrow night? Absolutely. I have a tough time, though, envisioning that after taking two out of three in Philadelphia and going up 3-2, that they're going to lose both games in Houston when they've already split. I have a really tough time thinking that Philadelphia is going to go to Houston when the Astros are the better team and take both games. But barring a walk-off home run tomorrow night, a crazy catch, another no-hitter, something like that, the leader in the clubhouse from this entire Astros run up until this point is the Chaz McCormick catch from last night. Because that game, it seemed like last night, Philadelphia just kept on threatening early on. Verlander had to work through some problems, found a way to get himself in line to go get a win. And in that last inning, when you see JT Realmuto hit that ball, and I'm watching it last night, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be a home run. And you start to look at McCormick, I go, oh, maybe this is not going to get out, but at least you're thinking a double. If he gets on, sure, you still got to get him in. You still got to eventually go on and win the game. But that feels like that building was just ready to erupt, was ready to explode. And if you get the pressure cooker of World Series on the verge of going up 3-2 and you allow JT Realmuto to get on, I'm thinking to myself that the Phillies are probably going to get this thing into extra innings bare minimum. And McCormick makes that insane catch last night. You look back at all the moments from this Astros run, Ryan, which just featured a combined no-hitter, by the way, in game number four. It's clearly going to be a top three moment from this run, but right now, that's the best moment that I've seen from this Astros run in this postseason where you currently sit.
Especially the magnitude, like I said, you're up by one run the ninth inning. Bryce Harper's on deck, who's been just the absolute postseason hero, and anytime he's gotten in a big spot, it felt like he has come through every single time. So if that lands and he's and Real Muto's on second, you think bare minimum, single run scores, tie game, and possibly, you know, with Harper in the moment, two run homer is definitely not out of the realm of possibility here. You lose the game just like that. So it's a serious turning catch.
And it's not as if they haven't had other good moments. Like Peña had the home run in the 18th inning, but they were winning that series regardless. They were up 2-0. Okay, they win the series. They never had to really break a sweat against the Philadelphia Phillies. They swept them, and they just absolutely owned the Yankees. So far from this run, the first two things that I could think of, I know it's easy because it's right in the moment and it's the most important games, but when I think of the Houston Astros so far from this run, it is the combined no-hitter in Philadelphia when you're down 2-1 in the series after Philadelphia was hitting home run after home run after home run, and then it's that McCormick catch. And that catch, I was in a bar last night while it was happening, and the bar, there's just certain things that happen when you have a big sporting event that everyone cares about. And whether you are the biggest baseball fan and you haven't watched baseball the entire postseason, when you hear the World Series on, you go, oh yeah, I gotta watch, even if you're just someone sitting at a bar trying to enjoy a cocktail on a Thursday night evening in New York City. And the whole building just around, like, oh, what a catch. Oh, my goodness gracious. It was unbelievable. This is how it sounded on the Houston Astros radio network.
1-1. That's hit in the air pretty deep to right center. It sends back McCormick onto the warning track, leaps at the wall, and he makes the catch. Oh, what a catch by McCormick. Crashing into the 13-foot-high wall and deep right center field. Two outs.
The catch of his life for McCormick. Comes back to Philly, his hometown, and makes a wonderful catch.
It even took the announcers a second or two to process it. Because, Ryan, in that moment, when the ball gets hit, you're thinking home run. Especially with the way that you were looking at it on Fox, like, the buildup, the shot that is extended, you see the whole field, the fans erupting like, oh, and it's going to center field. You had the fans rising like, this is going to happen. This is going to be a home run. They're going to go tie up this game. And then you see McCormick start to run, and he puts his hand up to go make the catch. And even in the moment when you realize, okay, it's not going to be a home run, did he catch it or not? Is it going to hit off the wall? What's going to happen? And it took a full second. Did he catch it? Did he catch? Oh, yeah, he did. The catch of his life. The hometown kid robs his hometown team. That was awesome. And it was, there's some moments where you know right away, yeah, it's a huge moment. But there was so much uncertainty until the moment happened. It made the catch even more and more impressive when you look back at it.
And also impressive, just kind of the ease that he did so. He glided back.
I mean, he
scaled the wall a little bit, but it's not like it was just like one of those out-of-body catches. It's his credit. It was a difficult catch. I mean, John Smoltz hit it right. You know, the degree of difficulty is very hard, especially going up a chain-link fence, trying to scale that, timing it right in the moment. Nonetheless, in the ninth inning, up by one, it's made it look pretty easy too, which is all the more impressive.
There's a great shot of Presley on the mound last night, or looking at the play. And then JT Realmuto, I saw this today on Twitter, they had the same reaction. And the same reaction is a totally different reaction when you know the magnitude of the moment. But JT Realmuto was shocked. Presley was shocked. And they both had the same look on their face. And that's what shows why great of a play that is, that both those guys are able to have the same reaction. One guy's thinking, oh, I can't believe that just happened, but you're stunned. And the other is saying, whew. But you're still just as equally stunned, because when that ball hits off the bat, bare minimum, I thought it was a home run, but bare minimum, you're thinking at least a double. And for that to be an out was really, really just wild. What a game. What a World Series this has been. The fact that that was 2-2 heading into last night, when Nola's done nothing, when Zach Wheeler hasn't pitched well, and this was 2-2, you had all the home runs in game number 3 for Philadelphia, where they shut him out 7-0. The Astros respond with the no-hitter. There was a lot of intrigue into the game last night of What kind of Verlander are you going to get? Were the Phillies' bats going to come alive early on in the game? And to have the Astros feel like they were in control, but knowing the margin of error was so slim, and to see it almost get taken away from you in that ninth inning, it is really just what has been a tremendous World Series. And now we sit here, I would be shocked if the Astros lose both games, but it's not a lock that the Astros are going to win Game 6. And then I guess anything could happen in a seventh game. I believe the pitching matchup for Game 6 is going to be Valdez going up against Zach Wheeler. I would think that Wheeler would win Game 6 and you get into a Game 7, and I'll just trust the Astros being the 106th juggernaut that they've been all season long, finding a way to get the job done. Are the Phillies done? Are the Phillies shot because of the no-hitter and then getting their hearts ripped out last night? Or does the Cinderella Philadelphia Phillies team that had 87 wins entering the postseason have one last fight and one last stand in them before the possibility of midnight hitting?
I think midnight's hitting. Astros winning Game 6. They close it out. The Phillies have been undefeated at home. The energy was outstanding. And you lose 2 out of 3, and you lose the last two especially. I don't think they come back from that.
I want a Game 7. Now, I really hope we do get a Game 7. You give me Sunday, Game 7, I'm all in. That would be awesome. It'd be fantastic to end this baseball season, which has been a stupid postseason, which you see what happened in the NL, which all we thought about the NL, and then what turned out to be what we didn't know about the NL. And in the AL, here comes the Houston Astros. But the Astros get the job done here. And if they hold on and they end up winning one more game, I don't know about you, Ryan. The cheating scandal, when it happened in the moment, I was irate. The way that they've been able to sustain their success, getting to bare minimum the ALCS each and every year, add all these new names into the fold. You see what Peña has been able to do. We see the guys that have departed this organization, like a George Springer, like a Carlos Correa. I don't excuse them for the scandal, don't get me wrong, but I've already have moved on past the scandal, and I don't care. And for the Astros, even though you shouldn't have been cheating, it's almost validation, the final thing that you need to say, okay, we could all move on from the cheating scandal, and you can't really use that against us anymore.
I mean, weird to talk about culture. We're talking about organization that is, you know, again, was accused and found of cheating, but like that goes straight. Their winning culture has hung through, and it's almost more frustrating. They didn't have to cheat to win. And this team has clearly shown you they didn't need to cheat. I think they would have won in 2017 regardless, because this team is good. They develop their talent really well. They draft really well. You can allow big-time players to leave. No problem. They just, Carlos Correa leaves. Here's Jeremy Peña, who's right now even better somehow.
And also Luno, absurd, no longer there, who was the architect of this, and A.J. Hinch as well.
Yep. They've gotten better somehow.
And for as the Phillies, the feel-good story would be Bryce Harper finally getting a ring. We all know the feel-good story would be this would be the cherry on top of what's going to be a Hall of Fame career for one Dusty Baker. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll update you on the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio on the other side. We call that segment the News Brief. But first up, with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, someone that was cooking something really good in the newsroom today. I don't know what the heck he was making.
Meatloaf.
Is that what it was?
It was the meatloaf.
I asked you, was that soup? Izzo and I, we were sitting back soup there, and I guess the vent in his office is connected to somehow the kitchen. And I go, what am I, in a diner? I smell soup.
No soup.
So you have meatloaf.
I was wondering why you asked me for soup.
Someone leave the kitchen, and Izzo goes, oh, yeah, I smell all the food that goes in here, and I thought it was soup.
Very interesting.
How was the meatloaf? Good? It smelled
very
good.
Yeah, very good.
Well, it smelled like soup, so I don't even actually know if it's that good, but.
That was very good.
I always love Axe food.
No complaints.
You bring in some good food here.
Well, I have no choice.
You don't order anything in?
No, because there's nothing really around here.
Everything's shut down.
Yeah, then you got to wait,
and
you don't know what's
going to. If you're ordering in, most likely.
Yeah, you don't know when it's going to come. It's more expensive, so this is a better, higher quality, and cheaper alternative.
What makes your skin crawl? No matter how absurd, I want to know.
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or opossums.
I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. You send me your fear.
I'm just so weirded out about the texture and how they can just move around and flop.
And then I go to the experts to learn how to overcome them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from. Is there something really absurd that skeeves you out?
Getting a paper cut on my eyeball?
A fear you can't shake?
I'm going to leak ocular fluid down my cheeks. It's going to go into my mouth and I will perish.
Whatever scares you, I want to talk about it. Join me, Larry Mullins, on my new podcast, Your Weirdest Fears. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from. What makes your skin crawl? No matter how absurd, I want to know.
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. You send me your fear.
I'm just so weirded out about the texture and how they can just move around and flop.
And then I go to the experts to learn how to overcome them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. For your daily news brief, we get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
The Philadelphia Eagles are 8-0 for the first time in their franchise history. Let's hear their head football coach, Nick Sirianni, on the importance of getting to 8-0 for the first time in the existence of the AGLES Eagles.
It's just the next one. At this particular point, being 8-0 is sweet, right? And, it beats the alternative of being 7-1 or 6-2, right? And so we know that our goal wasn't to go 8-0. Our goal is to take one game at a time. And that's our goal. And so is it good to be able to have this long weekend instead of 8-0? Of course. But we know that we're going to get back to work on Monday and go attack this next game against Washington like we attacked this last game against Houston.
So that was kind of a typical Thursday night game when you have a superior team up against an inferior team that you know the superior team's going to find a way to win. Sloppy a little bit, back and forth more than you expected, and eventually the better team pulls away. And they win a game by a margin that no one's going to really remember at the end of the season. This Eagles team is really damn good. And they're a well-rounded football team. I don't even think there's a major flaw on this football team. Like, Dallas Goedert is on pace to have an 1,100-yard season. And this is first year without Zach Ertz side-by-side for the entire season. I know Ertz had to deal with some injuries, but Ertz now being a full year removed and going into a first full season without even having for any games. You then have A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Miles Sanders is really good. Kenneth Gainwell has been a nice backup running back. The offensive line is great. The defense just has so many names. There's not a flaw with this Eagles team. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to be hoisting the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year. Can they? Absolutely. You also, though, look at their record of 8-0, and you see their schedule the rest of the way. If everything goes wrong for the Eagles, Ryan, it feels like the most losses they could get this year is three. And if you're sitting there with only three losses, yeah, you had a great season, at least in the regular season. And then you got to see if you could find a way to win what's probably going to be two playoff games to get to the Super Bowl, because it looks like the Eagles are well on their way to getting this bye.
How many losses do you think they can have, or will it take, I should say, maybe it's a better way to ask it, to get the second seed? Ooh. Like, what would their record have to be for them not right now to get the number one record?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily the record, it's who are your contenders. So they already beat Dallas, now they play Dallas again. They have not played the Giants yet, but I don't think anyone's considering the Giants to be a number one seed contender.
Played Minnesota, beat them.
And that's a big thing. They crushed Minnesota. Now it doesn't matter how you win the game necessarily in terms of this conversation. So they're going to need to have an extra loss, because if they have the same record as Minnesota, the Eagles have the tiebreaker. There's no one in the South that you could see being the number one seed. And when you look at the NFC West, there's no number one seed in the NFC West. So it really comes down to, can the Cowboys move past the Eagles? And I think that the Eagles are a better team. And the best way to probably answer that question is quickly to do win-loss in the Minnesota Vikings. So just give me the win-loss real quickly, like rapid fire. They play the Commanders this weekend.
Win.
Buffalo, then on Sunday night in Buffalo.
Loss.
Dallas.
Loss.
New England.
Win.
Jets.
Win.
Detroit.
Win.
Indianapolis.
Win.
Giants.
Win.
Green Bay, at Green Bay. Already beat Green Bay this year.
I'll go loss.
And then Chicago.
Win.
So you had them losing to Buffalo. Did you have them lose to Dallas real quickly?
Yes. So okay. Three more.
And three more. And they already have, first off, an 8-0 record, the Eagles. And the Vikings are right now 6-1. They haven't played yet this weekend. The Eagles also already beat. I really would have to think the Eagles would need to get to four losses for them to not get the number one seed. And they still may get the number one seed even with
so they
with
have to go
losses.
Basically 4-5 down the stretch.
And
Eagles
their schedule
do,
not
to lose the number one seed. That's pretty good.
I know when you say, hey, the schedule's a joke, it makes you take away from that football team. That's what I'm not doing. I'm not doing that. But who really scares you on the schedule? Commanders don't. Colts don't. Green Bay's not the same Green Bay. Tennessee's a good football team, but they don't scare you. The Giants are good, but they don't scare you. Bears don't scare you. Dallas is probably the team that scares you the most, and you already beat them. So to answer your question, I think you need to start talking about injuries for the Eagles not to get the number one seed. And they've been healthy, too. I think they're almost... It feels like a lock that they're going to get the number one seed. Jeffrey Simmons on his confidence that the Titans defense will dominate the Chiefs offense. This courtesy of SiriusXM NFL Radio. You do have Tennessee, Kansas City this weekend.
We know them. They know us. They haven't changed. And honestly, we might be missing a couple pieces, but we haven't changed. And the same with them. You know, I watch tape. So I'm looking at the offensive linemen that we have to play against. And I'm very confident that we could go out there and dominate them. So, I'm looking forward to the matchups up front, whoever it may be, or Thuney or Trey Smith at the guard position. But you know, I'm very confident in our defense going out there and having a great day.
I'm not blowing off this clip. I'm going to circle right back to it, but I want to just follow it up with Patrick Mahomes saying the Titans don't get enough credit for how good they are.
We're going to have to go out there and play our best football. And this is a team that is a lot better than I think a lot of the people out in social media and media, they don't really talk about them. But we know that it's a great football team coming to town. We have to play our best football.
And last year, we did see Kansas City just get their doors blown off 27-3 up against the Tennessee Titans. But here's the problem with Tennessee. And I say this all the time with the team that you root for, and I know it doesn't apply this year. A lot of times the AFC South team is stuck in an area of just being really good. Even last year when Tennessee had the number one overall seed, they didn't get out of that divisional round and they had a bye. Because you don't believe, and we don't even know if Ryan Tannehill is going to play this weekend yet, but you don't really believe in that quarterback. They have a good team. You know, they don't have a better roster than last year though. AJ Brown's not on that team. And now you have a hobbled Ryan Tannehill going into this weekend. The defense is good for the Titans. And you have an unstoppable force in Derrick Henry. But I've never been scared of Tennessee. And it's a team that, Ryan, as you know, got to an AFC Championship game a few years ago.
It's hard to be scared of a team like seven. There's not really a quarterback that can break a game open.
Like they have a good team, but their roster isn't great. And if you have to win without having a great quarterback, you have to have a great roster. And even though there are some great players on that team, their roster's not great enough where you go, wow, even when they're winning 11, 12, 13 games, surviving without Derrick Henry like they did last year, you're shaking your boots and go, oh, my goodness gracious, the big, bad Tennessee Titans are coming into town and we can't win. I'm not saying that Kansas City is going to win by, what, the 12.5-point spread or whatever it was with this, and we'll see what happens if Malik Willis does play. And it wouldn't shock me if it is within a touchdown, but Kansas City's going to win the game.
And not take away from last year, but that was in the midst and the height of the Chiefs' offense being broken. Yeah. So holding them to 3 points last year is a lot different. It's going to be a lot harder to do that again this year.
Kansas City, by the way, a 12.5-point favorite. Last one, let's get to Kirby Smart. He discusses the importance of the game versus Tennessee.
Look at all the games. You evaluate how people played them, what's been successful. I mean, they're looking at every game on us, and they're saying, okay, where are the explosive plays coming from? And probably more different for us to play them because everybody they play has to play them differently because of their offense. But we don't put more stock in one game over another.
I can't wait for this game. I really can't. You have that great Georgia defense. Tennessee's offense has been humming all throughout the year, getting more and more respect each and every week. There's not many doubters anymore. And for Tennessee, imagine that scene. If you could beat them one season, Alabama and then Georgia, and you still have an SEC title game to get to and eventually a college football playoff appearance. I really think the way that this is going to shake on out is you will get Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, pick two out of there. Right now, I would say Georgia and Tennessee get in. Winner of Ohio State, Michigan going to get in. And I don't think Clemson is a great team. I do think, though, Clemson's going to run the table. They survived that game against Syracuse. And I would have Clemson as one of the four teams in the college football playoff. I just think that's what the committee's going to do. Talking about college football, a former college football quarterback at LSU, also did make the NFL, got drafted in Major League Baseball, and is a good friend to the show, Josh Booty, is going to join us in studio next.
What makes your skin crawl? No matter how absurd, I want to know.
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. You send me your fear.
I'm just so weirded out about the texture and how they can just move around and flop.
And then I go to the experts to learn how to overcome them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from. Is there something really absurd that skeeves you out?
Getting a paper cut on my eyeball.
A fear you can't shake.
I'm going to leak ocular fluid down my cheeks. It's going to go into my mouth and I will perish.
Whatever scares you, I want to talk about it. Join me, Larry Mullins, on my new podcast, Your Weirdest Fears. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.